On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. But before we get into that, I have incredible, exciting, tremendous news. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the author and architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the New Communism, is out now on social media, at Bob Avakian Official on all the platforms. He's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up, at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL Revolution Nothing Less show is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment. So the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and today is the rotten 4th of July, a day we are told to celebrate this land of the thief, home of the slave. Well, here at the RNL show, we say hell no to celebrating America. And we say yes to celebrating and fighting for revolution, for a whole new way to live and a fundamentally different system. Last week, we saw that Cheeto-colored American Hitler, Donald Trump, lying and spewing racist garbage every time his lips moved.
He's become like a Palestinian, but they don't like him because he's a very bad Palestinian. He's a weak one.
And we saw Genocide Joe, Zombie Edition, double down on his crimes against humanity in their complete show of a debate.
We're providing Israel with all the weapons they need and when they need them.
These two really are perfect representatives of this outmoded system of capitalism imperialism. Outmoded, that is long past its expiration date. These two have profound differences with each other,
But there they were competing over who could better finish the job of the genocide against the Palestinians, competing over who could crack down harder on immigrants, competing over who is more in love with America, this model of racist, depraved genocide. Again, Trump and Biden, both of them disgusting, revolting, but perfect representatives of this putrid system of capitalism imperialism, a system that cannot be reformed and must be overthrown. Well, our leader, Bob Avakian, is the perfect representative of the revolution that we need and the future of real emancipation that this revolution aims to bring about. Bob Avakian tells the truth, and he breaks down the truth so that everybody can understand it. Bob Avakian says straight up, American lives are not more important than other people's lives.
We need an orientation, a morality, and a movement that is internationalist, that proceeds on the understanding that the whole world comes first, not America, and that the fundamental and ultimate goal is the emancipation of all humanity.
Bob Avakian has never and will never make peace with this system of capitalism imperialism. Instead, he has fought for and he has forged the revolutionary understanding and the strategy we need to make a real revolution to overthrow this system. And through it all, Bob Avakian has maintained his love for humanity and an expansive appreciation for the beauty and understanding that humans can create through science, through the arts, and how all of this, too, is an essential part of the revolution we need. And every day, B.A. Bob Avakian is providing world-class leadership to show us how we can advance the fight to make this revolution real, right in this country, right in this time. So today, for this July 4th edition of the RNL Show, we're going to broadcast a significant portion of the interview that we did here on this show with Bob Avakian a little while back. We're going to broadcast the opening, the first of the series of three interviews that we did with him, where we ask him to share more about his life. We ask him if he always had this view of this country, of America, and this system, and how he came to have this view. And by viewing this portion of this interview that we're going to share with you today, you'll get a chance to get to know this revolutionary leader more deeply, how he came to be this way, and you will get a deep sense of the true nature of this country and why we say America is nothing to celebrate. After that, at the end of the show, I'll bring you 10 ways that the Democrats have repeatedly stabbed women in the back when it comes to abortion rights. We keep being told, if you care about women, if you care about abortion, you got to vote for the Democrats. Well, I'm going to break down the truth of their actual record. But first, to get us started, we have two shorter pieces. First, an inconvenient truth, and then a social media response to last week's presidential debate by Lenny Wolf. So with that, let's get started.
An inconvenient, but absolutely necessary truth for July 4th. The U.S., founded in slavery, has perpetrated genocide against Native American people. Invaded, occupied, and staged coups throughout the world.
September 11th, 1973, a U.S.-backed coup in Chile led by General Augusto Pinochet ousted Chile's democratically elected president, Salvador Allende.
The CIA has released documents that show its role in the 1953 coup. That is the coup that toppled Iran's democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh. Shortly after his election, the CIA began to plan his overthrow.
Dropped nuclear bombs,
This is Hiroshima. The day after the atom bomb exploded, 30% of the city's population was killed.
Napalmed farming villages. Trained legions of baby-killing death squads. Assassinated leaders they didn't like.
Patrice Lumumba became the Congo's first prime minister after it gained independence in 1960. But he was only in office for a few months, which led to him being ousted in a coup, imprisoned, tortured, and later executed.
Terrorized wedding parties with drone bombings.
We were having a traditional marriage ceremony. One of the missiles hit the car. The car was totally burned. Blood was everywhere, and the people killed and injured were scattered everywhere.
And now, they are bringing humanity closer to the brink of catastrophic, even nuclear war, with their imperialist rivals in Russia and China. And they've lied about every bit of this in the name of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Now, please welcome the 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Folks, how are you? We're providing Israel with all the weapons they need and when they need them. All that money we give Ukraine are from weapons we make here in the United States. We give them the weapons.
And please welcome the 45th President of the United States, Donald Trump.
Why he allowed millions of people to come in here from prisons, jails, and mental institutions to come into our country and destroy our country. We have a border that's the most dangerous place anywhere in the world, considered the most dangerous place anywhere in the world. And he opened it up, and these killers are coming into our country, and they are raping and killing women. We have the Palestinians, and we have everybody else rioting all over the place.
I want to talk to you about the debate, the great debate, between genocide Joe Biden and that fascist Hitler Donald Trump. On the one side, you had Trump, that fascist lunatic who blamed every single problem produced by this imperialist, this capitalist imperialist system, whether it's unemployment, whether it's opiate addiction, whatever, was blamed on the immigrants. Immigrants who have been driven here by that same capitalist imperialist system that causes all those problems. This is straight out of the Nazi playbook, where they blamed the Jews for every problem in Germany. On the other side, you had genocide Joe Biden, most of the time looking like some member of the cast of The Walking Dead. He only jerked to life when it came time to talk about how great the troops are that he sends all over the world to defend this same capitalist imperialist system. Here's three things you need to know about this debate. Number one, this system has no answers. They had no answers. No answers to the wars that are breaking out all over this planet. No answers to what's happening with our climate and our environment. No answers to the racism that never, ever ends in America. No answers to these horrible, brutal attacks and persecution going down on women and lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. No answers whatsoever to anything, because their system has no answers. That's number one. Number two, these Democrats will never fight the fascists the way they need to be fought. Because like the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian says, they are worried that if the masses come into the streets, they will get all out of the control of the Democrats and the system that they serve. Number three, you need to get with this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. Bob Avakian's developed an understanding of a whole different way we could be living. And he's shown in social media messages why we need a revolution against this system and how people could make a revolution in this time, not in some far off distant time. Go to Bob Avakian Official. That's Bob Avakian Official. Be part of bringing into being a whole different world. Get with us now. No fascist Trump, no genocide Joe. This whole damn system's got to go.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Times, tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children, grown adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint and pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He waked with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream on the checkpoint. He waked with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Gumming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tear at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at a checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is the law at the checkpoint. Criminalized without a cause at the checkpoint. I'm just telling you what I saw at the checkpoint. Soldiers got bad attitudes at the checkpoint. Condescending and real rude at the checkpoint. Don't look them in their eyes when they move at the checkpoint. They might strip a man or woman nude at the checkpoint. Soldiers might blow you out the shoes at the checkpoint. Gas you up and in like the fuse at the checkpoint. Every day you stand to be accused at the checkpoint. Each time your life you can lose at the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream of the checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream with a checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
At the airport in Tel Aviv is the checkpoint. They pulled over our taxi at the checkpoint. Passport, visa, ID at the checkpoint. Soldiers going all through my things at the checkpoint. I was high-risk security at the checkpoint. Cause of the oppression I see at the checkpoint. Occupation in the third degree at the checkpoint. All a nigga wanna do is leave. Fuck a checkpoint. 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 Checkpoint.
So listen, we're really excited for our audience and especially new people just learning about the revolution to get a chance to hear from you directly about why we need a revolution, why this revolution is possible and what this revolution is about, and to get to know you better through this process. So the first question we wanted to ask you takes off from a spoken word piece that you wrote a number of years ago, an incredible spoken word piece called All Played Out. And I want to read the second verse and ask you about it. You write, "This puffed up stuff about the land of the free.
This puffed up stuff about the land of the free and the home of the brave. A country that built itself on bodies of slaves and ruthless genocidal robbery. That spreads its empire through plunder, driving countless people under. With its bloody red, white, and blue rag unfurled. All this pompous nonsense about the leader of the free world. That's
a country that built itself on bodies of slaves and ruthless genocidal robbery, that spreads its empire through plunder, driving countless people under with its bloody red, white, and blue rag unfurled. All this pompous nonsense about the leader of the free world, that's all played out." So we wanted to ask and give you a chance to talk about, did you always have this view of America? And if not, how did you first come to see this country in this way and its role in the world?
Oh no,
I was a very loyal American. You know, I think I said in my memoir that one time I said I felt like getting down on my knees and thanking God that I was born in this great country, unlike all these other unfortunate people all around the world who were, forced to live in other countries. And I remember when I was 16, I think, I went to a baseball game, a Giants baseball game in San Francisco, and of course they play the national anthem before, and so, you know, everybody rose and I got up and I enthusiastically was singing, you know, oh, say, can you see, et cetera, et cetera. And when it finished, the woman in front of me turned around and said, my, you have a beautiful voice. And I just can't help thinking back about the irony of that, you know. But then, as I did learn things, I used to go to the games and this was during the Vietnam War, when they would play the national anthem, I did a different version that someone I knew was part of the movement that I was part of made up, which was, oh, Uncle Sam, get out of Vietnam. Get out of Vietnam. So that was a different rendition of the song and didn't get quite the same response from the people in front of me, but you know, that was a transformation I went through, and it was a lot of different things. I grew up in Berkeley. I was very fortunate to go to a high school. There was only one high school in the entire city, so everybody, of course, went to it. And in those days, there weren't as many. There weren't all these Christian fundamentalist schools. There were a few Catholic schools, but mostly everybody went to the high school, the public high school. And so you were thrown together with all these people, you know, Latinos, you know, there were a lot of black people, and, you know, some of whom I had known from being in sports competition earlier. And then we got put together, and because I was playing football, I was in gym class with a lot of people who were on the football team who had come from the different middle schools or junior high schools where they were mainly black people. And so this was like introduced me to a whole different side of America. And, you know, I had a lot of experiences. Some of them are funny to look back on, but they weren't particularly funny at the time. You know, they were kind of hair-raising. But, you know, this was starting me on a different path of learning about what this country is really all about. So that was the start of it.
I have to ask, funny and hair-raising. Maybe you could give an example.
Well, you know, when I was in 10th grade, this high school was only 3 years at that time, 10th grade, 11th, and 12th. So when I was in 10th grade, I was in gym class, and at that particular time, our instruction, so to speak, was swimming. And so I was, you know, just standing by the pool, hanging out, and there was this friend of mine, Langston Tabor, who, you know, had come from a different junior high, but then we had some friction when we played sports in junior high, but then we became friends in high school, and he was kind of hanging out behind me, and I'm just minding my own business, and all of a sudden this big dude comes up and he's just looming over me, and he looks at me and he says, are you Bob Avakian? And I said, yeah. And he said, did you go to Garfield? That's the junior high I went to, which was almost all white. And I said, yeah. And he said, did you play basketball? And I said, yeah. He said, did you play against Burbank? That's where he went. I said, yeah. And I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. And he said, did you foul me? And then I had a sense something big was up, you know. And so, but, you know, I was kind of naive, so I just kind of straightforwardly said, well, I might have. I can't remember something like that. And then he looked at me, and he got this big grin across his face. And I thought it might have lasted like a minute or two. Probably only lasted about 15 seconds. And then he finally just kind of turned and slowly walked away. And after this was over, Langston came running up to me and he said, man, you don't know what just happened here. He said, that's Jack McRae. He's one of the baddest dudes in the whole school. And I said, what are you talking about, man? He said, you know, he was getting ready to fire on you. He was going to punch you out. I said, come on, man. He was smiling. And he laughed and he said, yeah. But when he gets that smile on his face, that's when he's going to unload on somebody. But I guess what happened was Jack just kind of looked at it and said, oh, man, this white boy, he just kind of doesn't get it, so I'm just going to let him slide. So that was kind of a thing that made an impression on me, shall we say. You know, it started me thinking about a bunch of stuff because you realized that this wasn't really just about, you know, the basketball game. There was a lot of tension in that game. In fact, they nearly stopped the game because we had broke out, near fights were just about ready to break out every few minutes. But it was, this was much more like people testing you, you know, like, see, where, you know, where are you coming from? What kind of person are you? You know, how are you going to respond when they put it to you a little bit? You know, because things were going on that were much bigger than me and Jack McRae. There, this was the whole time when the civil rights movement was gaining momentum, and it also translated into personal relations and just, you know, everyday social relations where, you know, people, especially black people, just weren't putting up with shit the way they had before. You know, and they were feeling the strength of the, you know, gathering movement. And so this was like, this was sort of an expression of that, even though it was in a sort of a personal realm. And so, you know, these are the kind of experiences that I had a number of times in high school that kind of, you know, opened me up to more things, should I say.
The other thing that you cited and you sang was Get Out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
How did that play into your changing view on America?
Well, you see, here's where things are interconnected. Like, as a result of these experiences, I made a lot of friends of different kinds. You know, I ate lunch one semester with some Japanese girls who were, you know, very sharp and smart, but also, you know, a lot of fun. So I learned something about their culture, you know. And then, you know, just going through high school and everything, I really began, as a result of black friends of mine, you know, to get a much better, deeper sense of what it was like to be black in this country and the whole history of it. I mean, you know, not that they gave me history lessons, but just, you know, the everyday exchanges of friends, you know. I began, and I really developed a deep anger and hatred about this. And I remember the turning point for me about Vietnam came in 1965. When there was a march, you know, from Selma. And I got up in the morning and I got the newspaper and I opened up and this big article about this attack on these civil rights marchers, you know, on the Pettus Bridge. And I was going back and forth about Vietnam. I'd been part of the free speech movement in Berkeley and most of the leaders, if not all of them, of that movement were against the Vietnam War. But I hadn't made up my mind yet. I was I respected them a lot. I was influenced by them, but I hadn't really, I was doing some study to try to understand it, but I hadn't made up my mind. And I opened up the paper that day and I looked at it and these pictures of Selma and I said to myself, how in the f- can the rulers of this country be trying to bring freedom to the people in Vietnam when this is what goes on in this country? Time after time, and you know, yes, it's in the South, but the leaders of the country as a whole are doing nothing to stop this. How in the hell can they be bringing freedom to the people in Vietnam? And that was it for me. From then on, I was firmly opposed to the Vietnam War.
One other follow-up question I want to ask is the kind of questioning and transformation that you're describing, I think was going on among a lot of people at that time. And it is so radically different than the culture right now, which is just suffocating with like reverence for the US military and its role in the world. And thank you for your service at the ball games, in the basketball, in the airports, in the culture very broadly. And you have stressed that this is something that really needs to be sharply taken on. Why do you think that's so important?
Because you're never going to bring about any kind of fundamental change. And certainly you're not going to bring about a revolution when people are still pledging their allegiance in whatever way to this whole imperialist system, you know, that and the dominant imperialists in the world, namely the US, which wreaks tremendous havoc on people all over the world, causing tremendous suffering as well as being the major destroyer of the environment. And unless people break with that, no kind of really positive change, and certainly not any fundamental revolutionary change, can possibly take place, you know. And with all this, you know, all this bullshit of, you know, thank you for your service, it reflects the fact that, you know, most people, you know, one thing that we talked about Vietnam, one thing that the ruling class of this country summed up after Vietnam was their army was coming apart at the seams. It was no longer a reliable fighting force by the end of the Vietnam War in the early 70s. And, you know, I myself, you know, on the Berkeley campus and more generally, had a lot of exchanges with both with veterans who'd been in Vietnam and also with soldiers who were on leave, who were either like on their way to Vietnam or coming back from Vietnam, because I usually did a year in Vietnam, as I recall. And, you know, they were turning against the war in greater and greater, and partly, you know, because of the struggle we waged with them, but also mainly because of a larger thing going on, both what was happening in the war and what they were seeing and what they were being forced to do, the atrocities they were being forced to commit, and also the massive opposition to it around the world, and but also of great significance in the U.S. itself. And so, you know, at that time, the ruling class summed up, well, you know, this was an army where we drafted a lot of people. And they had a lot of people in the army who really didn't want to be there in the first place, and who really identified increasingly with the people who were opposing the war. I mean, one of the, just to take the point, moment here, one of the big things, that bullshit things that really angers me is all these ruling class figures who say, oh, you know, all these students and everybody else on the college campuses and these elite campuses, all these kids who opposed the Vietnam, they were all just a bunch of spoiled brats. They didn't have to go to Vietnam because they got a student deferment. And, you know, then all the working class and poor kids had to go and fight in Vietnam. The fact is that the strongest opposition to the Vietnam War was among the poor people, among black people, among Latinos. That's where the strongest opposition was. And even the anti-war movement that I was part of, you know, while there were a lot of very large numbers of white middle-class kids and other middle-class kids involved, we were also influenced by people like Stokely Carmichael, you know, and others who were calling out the war as imperialist. So it is just absolute garbage that it was, you know, only these privileged brats who, you know, who opposed the war. But to get back to the point more directly, the ruling class summed up, this is not a good army for us where we draft people, most of whom come from among the ranks of the oppressed, however they thought of it. But objectively, they came from the ranks of the oppressed. And, you know, we were forcing them to fight in these wars. So they went over to an all-volunteer army. So now the compulsion for people to join is, you know, economic. It's not a draft where you go to jail if you don't answer the call to be in the military. And so, you know, you got a tiny percentage of the population that's in the military, and everybody else doesn't have to go, especially the better off people. And so a lot of this is what we call the parasitism of American imperialism, where you're basically feasting off the people of the world. You're at the high point of the end of the food chain, living off of the women in Bangladesh who are slaving away in garment factories, while, by the way, their country's being engulfed by water because of climate change. You know, or the children in the Congo who are mining the minerals that go into cell phones and computers and what have you. You know, we're living, in this country, you're living off of that. No matter what part of the society you're in. Yes, the spoils of this, to put it that way, are very unevenly distributed, but there's still a fact that everybody is getting some of those spoils. And so, you know, the way I look at it is a thank you for your services. Thank you, you're doing this so I don't have to do it and I can live off this parasitism mm-hmm. that you're out there slaughtering people to make possible.
Para mi querida tía María, te quedaste en México.
Para los niños en la frontera. Trying to look past this thing that's between us, wondering when all this anger will fade. The stars look the same from where we are standing. Why can't we fix this mess we've made? Let's not forget that our fates are as one, just because we feel numb and betrayed. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is hope, we must try. If we don't, we'll regret it the rest of our lives, side by side. Forever, you and me, we are stronger together. Hoping to find a path to forgiveness, knowing that pride always gets in the way. We all want a place where it's safe to be human, the welcome embrace of a brand new day. Let's not allow what we have to be lost just because of what someone might say. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between you and me. There is
forever. You and me, we are stronger together.
Years ago, the fascist-packed, illegitimate Supreme Court ripped abortion rights away from women. Every day since, women are being forced to have children they did not want or to carry pregnancies that put their very lives in danger. The fury of women and all those who care about justice is simmering across this country, and hardly a day goes by when the Democratic Party doesn't try to pimp off this anger by telling you that if you really care about abortion rights, if you really care about women, you have no choice but to vote for the Democrats. Well, what is the actual track record of these Democrats when it comes to abortion rights? Here are 10 ways the Democrats have repeatedly stabbed women in the back when it comes to abortion rights. 1. The Democrats have ceded the moral high ground to Christian fascist haters of women, and they've done this for decades. Starting in 1992, Bill and Hillary Clinton insisted that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare.
Our vision should be of an America where abortion is safe and legal, but rare.
Going back really at least 15 years, and talking about abortion being safe, legal, and rare. And by rare, I mean rare.
They even wrote rare into the Democratic Party platform. But why rare? This implies that there's something morally wrong with abortion. There is not. It is a great thing for women to be able to decide for themselves when and whether to have a child. Women need abortion on demand and without apology. 2. The Democrats have approved the Hyde Amendment every year since 1977. The Hyde Amendment cut Medicaid funding so that poor women could no longer afford safe, legal abortions. Just months after it passed, Rosie Jimenez became the first woman known to have died from a cheap, illegal abortion because of Hyde. She left behind a 4-year-old daughter. Others have died, and millions of women have been forced to have children against their will with all the extra degradation that brings when you are already in poverty. After years of pressure, when he was running for president, Biden finally promised that he would be the one to repeal Hyde. But that was a lie. He, just like Democratic presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama, has approved Hyde every single year as president. 3. Obama went out of his way to build the Hyde Amendment restrictions into his much-celebrated Affordable Care Act.
And one more misunderstanding I want to clear up. Under our plan, no federal dollars will be used to fund abortions, and federal conscience laws will remain in place. Now,
on top of that, Obama gave states the option to ban any health care plan that covers abortion, even with their own private funds, which half the states in this country immediately did. 4. When Christian fascists started demonizing, stalking, and assassinating abortion providers, the Democratic Party distanced themselves from these providers. One example among many, for years, the anti-abortion fascists targeted the heroic abortion doctor, Dr. George Tiller. They put out his home address. They published wanted posters. They demonized him in fascist media.
Tiller the killer is
Tiller the baby killer.
Tiller the baby killer out in Kansas, acquitted.
acquitted today of murdering babies. The notorious Tiller, the baby killer case, where Dr. George Tiller destroys fetuses for just about any reason right up until the birth date for $5,000.
In 1993, Tiller survived an assassination attempt when he was shot in both arms. And then, in 2009, Tiller was assassinated while he served as an usher in his church.
It was a single bullet that killed the doctor who for 36 years weathered massive protests, bombs at his clinic, and in 1993, gunshot wounds. But he defiantly held his ground.
What I am doing is legal, what I'm doing is moral, what I'm doing is ethical, and you're not going to run me out of town.
Nearly 1,000 people showed up to his funeral from all across the country. This man was so beloved. He was such a courageous hero. I went. Not a single Democratic politician showed up. Five, the Democrats constantly focus their criticism of abortion bans on the most extreme cases. Oh, they say there's no exception for rape. Oh, there's no exception for the life of the woman. Yes, these things reveal just how fascist and woman-hating the anti-abortion movement is. But by consistently refusing to speak up for the millions and millions of women who get abortions just because they don't want to be mothers at that particular time in their lives, this line of defense sets people up to accept ever more extreme abortion bans, so long as there are a few exceptions. It is completely defensive. And this is exactly what has happened all the way up to abortion being overturned. Six, the Democrats refuse to take on the Christian fascists straight up. Instead, they repeatedly seek common ground with these fanatical haters of women. Back in 2009, for example, Obama made a point of inviting Rick Warren to give the convocation at his first inauguration. Who's Rick Warren? Here's how I put it in an article at the time. Quote, Warren unapologetically demands the subordination of women, that is half of humanity, to men. His church's website quotes 1 Corinthians, the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man. But that's not all. Rick Warren actually compares abortion to the Jewish Holocaust. The fact that anyone can morally equate women who choose abortion with Nazis is astounding. But the fact that pro-choice and progressive people can advocate common ground with this is deadly self-delusion. Seven, in their pursuit of common ground, the Democrats have repeatedly run anti-abortion candidates. They've even bragged about this as some kind of brilliant election strategy. Eight, the Democrats repeatedly break their promises to stand up for abortion rights. When he was running for president the first time, Obama promised that the very first thing he would do, if elected, is to codify abortion rights. That is, pass a law that would protect abortion rights, even if the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
Well, the first thing I'd do as president is sign the Freedom of Choice Act. That's the first thing that I'd do.
Once he got elected?
The Freedom of Choice Act is not my highest legislative priority.
Nine, the Democrats capitulated in advance. They gave up without a fight when the Supreme Court was clearly on track to overturn abortion rights in 2022. We caught them on video. The fact that there was absolutely no fight being waged to stop the overturning of Roe v. Wade is why I joined with others to initiate and lead Rise Up for Abortion Rights. We sounded the alarm. We spoke out and did nonviolent civil disobedience. We went to jail. We mobilized tens of thousands of furious women and others to flood the streets.
This decision must not stand!
This decision must not stand!
Legal abortion and on demand!
Legal abortion and on demand!
This decision must not stand!
Meanwhile, what did the so-called leaders of the so-called movement, who are so slavishly tied to the Democrats, do? Many of them attacked us as alarmists and spread lies and slanders against me and against the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, who is providing extraordinary leadership and clarity. These haters did this to derail this mass struggle and keep people from looking deeper at the nature of this system and the need for revolution. 10. The Democrats have spent decades refusing to even use the word abortion. Instead of talking about the right to abortion, they talked about the right to choose. They're not for abortion, they insist. They're just pro-choice.
I am pro-choice. I believe in Roe versus Wade. And I come to that conclusion not because I'm pro-abortion, but because ultimately I don't think women make these decisions casually.
And they've come up with a million other ways to tiptoe around the word.
Women's ability to get basic health care, our right to make the most deeply personal decisions, is facing the most significant threats in recent memory.
In my right to choose, I have 5 children in 6 years and 1 week. It's none of our business how other people choose the size and timing of their families.
Joe Biden, who personally opposes abortion, used the word only one time in the first 1,253 days of being president. Then he finally uttered the word during his disastrous debate last week with Trump, and he used it negatively.
But we are not for late-term abortion, period, period, period.
Don't they say that the definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over and expecting different results? Don't be insane. Stop voting for these Democrats thinking it is going to protect abortion rights and stop this vicious war on women. These Democrats will never fight the Christian fascists the way they need to be fought. They won't do this because while they have very profound differences with these fascists, they are loyal to the same system of capitalism and imperialism that has given rise to these fascists, a system that has the patriarchal oppression of women built into it. And as Bob Avakian has pointed out, quote, the Democrats, whether or not they are personally religious and specifically Christian, base themselves on the conviction that religion, and in particular Christianity, is necessary in order to hold together their system of capitalism and imperialism, which is full of cruelly exploitative and oppressive relations and divisions that could tear the country apart if religion did not play a major role in holding it together in the face of this terrible exploitation and oppression and the brutality and murder that enforces it. End quote. Break out of this system's choices. Stand up and speak and fight for the truth that these Democrats will never say or fight for. Forced motherhood is female enslavement. Women need abortion on demand and without apology. And right now, when the rights of women and others are being ripped away by the day, with even greater horrors in the offing, learn about and join the fight for a real revolution to overthrow this system that both the Democrats and these fascist Republicans represent. Go to @BobAvakianOfficial to learn more and connect with the RevCom Corps for the emancipation of humanity at RevCom.us. Break the chains. Unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. All right, we've come to the end of today's show. I want to thank you for tuning in. And sign up for Revolution School, starting soon, for the chance to dig into Bob Avakian's social media messages, 1 through 11, together with others. Because if you do not know why we need a revolution, and how that revolution can be made in this time, then you don't know what you need to know. And right now is the time to change that. Again, sign up for Revolution School. Thanks to the RNL team for putting this show together. And we'll see you back here next week.
We've got some time left, so I'd like to play this.
All played out. We must broadly unite to carry out the fight to resist the crimes of this system. But on the real revolution is the only solution. So we need to call out things whose time has run out, which keep people in chains, suffering unbearable pain. These things are all played out. Capitalist vultures, big-time and worldwide exploiters, preaching about personal responsibility, ranting about predators and criminality, terrorizing youth in the inner cities, while you loot everywhere you see, slaughter people and rain destruction through crimes untold, all to enforce your rule and amass your gold on the backs of billions, chaining them in slavery new and old. Your time in history, it's gone. It's all played out. This puffed up stuff about the land of the free and the home of the brave. A country that built itself on bodies of slaves and ruthless genocidal robbery. That spreads its empire through plunder, driving countless people under with its bloody red, white, and blue. nonsense about the leader of the free world. That's
all laid out.
Vicious politicians and mindless mobs, screaming and threatening, hounding people driven from their homelands, growling and howling, speak English, go home. These fools aren't saying anything worthwhile in any tongue. It's the same old song they've always sung. Fade deeper in the shadows, suffer in silence while you slave. To create wealth we crave, it's our way, backed up by violence. This garbage is
all laid out.
People of privilege demanding their right to be a parasite, whining about how things aren't good like they used to be back in the day when things were done in an even worse way. Look you in the face, say it's not about race or keeping half of humanity down. But once you're in your place, if you're a woman or black or brown, what this is, it's
all played out.
Nigger, a homicidal epithet from days of slave ship nightmare, plantation overseers with whips, lynch mobs, racist whites on power trips, repeated still now by far too many, openly racist or hyped as hip and cool, frat boys blasting rap. Who do they think they fool? Nigger, a word that bites deeper than a frothing rabid beast, that shouts the horror of centuries, cruelty and brutality, a word nobody should want to use, a word that just can't be made good, even if a shout out to homies in the hood. This word and everything it stands for, it's long past time it be
all laid out.
Modern day Uncle Toms, respectable Negroes who squawk out toys, parrot lies of powers that be, packet slander is the truth, never fail to blame the youth, even slam them as our worst enemy. Oh, you bootlicking wannabe second class bourgeoisie, you're
all played out.
Reverends and the rest, not ones who really stand with the oppressed, but those who strut and preach to keep the people down on their knees, suffering indignity. Put the blame on those unfree for ways that they are kept in misery. Pompous, self-righteous asses who breathe contempt for the masses. Fools who worship the powers that be, insisting the things stay locked within the bounds of bargains with the bourgeoisie.
All played out.
Backward-ass athletes and entertainers wearing a cross, slavish symbol of submission, never making it their mission to use their position to help people rise up. Never raise a fist, but point a foolish finger to the sky, giving praise, helping to spread the lie that in this system, you can make it if you try. So if you're poor and beaten down, it's you to blame. Never demanding to know why, if some supposed God controls all this, so many suffer needlessly. Shame should be on such a God if it existed. But all this God talk is just twisted. It's all in God's hands. Leave it to the Lord. Just help this system stay in power. When bowing down to lords and masters should be over, all this too is
all played out.
Falling for that game, caught up in those lies about Obama, how he's bringing peace and something really new. When he does the same as done before, still using torture, no better than John Hugh and that whole crew, waging unjust wars that never cease. You look the other way, time after time, day after day, at all the crimes against humanity under Obama's command and with his decree. He talks about getting beyond race. His is just a different face that covers all too familiar murder and brutality by sneering pigs hunt down youth in inner cities. You should know this game is
all played out.
Elections, where if you're looking for a better world, no matter how you choose, yes, P.S., you lose. You're always left deflated and frustrated because the politicians and elections are cogs in a machine, part of a system that runs and rules by treating human beings and the earth as things to be exploited and despoiled. Believing the hype, putting all your faith in this bourgeois our democracy, this lie of people's sovereignty? Come on, it's all played out. Placing your hand over your heart, honoring the rag of U.S. imperialism, doing your part to prove you are respectable. We'll do only what's acceptable. Pledging allegiance to this flag, bowing down to this monstrosity that causes so much horror for humanity.
All played out.
I got my mind on my money and my money on my mind. That craziness about being like Scarface, acting without a trace of humanity, plundering and violating without remorse, killing and dying for no good purpose. Give it up. It's
all played out.
Men thinking it's their right to order women around and misuse them, to degrade and abuse them, talking all that talk about bitches and hoes, and if she's pregnant she can't have an abortion because she should have kept her legs closed. Assertion of manhood, or talk of protecting womanhood, which still means keeping women subordinated and dominated. All this garbage about women being less than man, less than fully human, that's
all played out.
Disrespecting people who love someone of the same sex, treating them as objects of contempt, dogging them, beating them down for being different. Religious tradition encoding oppression, authority invoked to enforce suppression of sexuality in forms that are outside the norms that are proclaimed natural and God-ordained. Norms that in reality enforce exploitation, perpetuate patriarchy and male domination. All this too is
all played out.
Shop until you drop. Buy, buy, buy. You are what you own. Your worth is what you purchase. I. Throngs gathering to scramble for the latest iToy rage, but not to resist injustice and endless outrage.
All played out.
Tabloid addiction and gossip slinging, treating as prominent what is really trivial, making what really matters seem invisible, acting like mobs in Roman arenas, sneering and snarking with a vicious demeanor, building yourself up by tearing other people down.
All played out.
Putting up with all this madness, even though you know it's wrong.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at The Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out The RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.